country, and it is Oregon, Oregon. Now, speaking behalf of the Westerners, it's not Oregon, and there's no Nevada, and it's Oregon and Nevada. Now, speaking for Westerners, we let you guys pronounce Arkansas any way you want to. So when it comes to the other side of the country, you have to cooperate with us. Anyway, enough of that. Oregon is where I grew up, and we lived in Portland, which is about an hour from the ocean. And so several times a year, two, three, four times a year, we would go to the ocean and play, which was, you're kind of landlocked here, so I don't know how often you guys get away to an ocean or anything, but I don't know. Yes, no? Ever? All right. Well, you're just going to have to take my word for it that there are oceans and they're quite big. No, but that was just, you know, like here, you guys are close to Heber Springs. People at work are all excited about how close they are to Tunica. You know, there's things that you're close to and that you go every once in a while and enjoy yourself. At least that's what they tell me. And it was the same way where I was growing up with the ocean. Is that three or four times a year we'd go over there and play in the water. Now, and my parents and my sister and I, and we'd all go there. And my sister and I had a policy that you can't go within sight of the ocean without getting in. Now, once you turn 18 or so, this policy starts to change a little bit. You're just like, oh, that's pretty. But, you know, for the under 18 crowd, you can't, it's a waste. It is wrong. It's a crime against nature and God to travel all the way to the ocean and then just look at it. You have to get in and experience it. And we would get in and experience it every time. I remember it didn't matter if the sun was shining, because it hardly ever did. It didn't matter if it was raining. It didn't matter if there was a typhoon blowing. We had to get in the ocean. I remember getting in the ocean with a big thick coat on and shivering. I remember more than once saying, are you kids? You kids look cold. Why don't you come out? You're purple. No, we're good. We're good. Just a few more waves. It was just the kind of thing that you do. You just love to do it. And the big thing in the ocean, if you're a kid, is to jump over the waves. The waves come in. If you've been to wave pool, you kind of see the whole thing. Waves come in, and you jump over it. You're like, oh, that was great. Now, this, you've heard of, like, the irresistible force and the immovable object and how they hit. There's no shortage of waves, and for a young child, there's really no shortage of energy. So this whole thing could take place for hours and hours and days and days. Like, I'm going to jump the waves. I'm going to jump the waves. And the parents are just exhausted watching this. They're just like, how can you jump waves? This is the kind of thing that we were doing. You know, me and my sister were there, and we're jumping waves and having a great time. And this time, my uncle was there, I remember. And we had a great time jumping waves, and I was kind of tired, and I was just about ready to be done. And he turns to me and says, you want to go out there? Like, out where? Out in the deep water. And I was like, yeah. But have you noticed that my mom's back there? I mean, this is where we're at right here. He says, don't worry, she's my sister. I'll swing this. So somehow, I really wish I knew. It would have made the whole rest of my life easier if I knew how to convince my mom how to do these kind of things. Somehow he convinced her that we were going to go out in the deep water. And so we did. I took his hand and we went out there and I was jumping the waves like normal. It was great fun. And then pretty soon the waves went from knee-high to about waist-high. And I was still, you got to jump to keep the splash out of your face. And then they got up to be about chest-high. And I'm like, yeah, that was good. And it got to the point where when the wave would come in, he kind of tug on my hand to get my feet off the ground just so my head would clear the wave and it wouldn't come over my head. And I come down and I touch ground and I'm like, oh, wow, I feel really big and adventurous, you know. And like, ooh, you're up on the wave and you come down. And then came the wave where your feet never came back down and touched the ground. And I'm here to tell you that something changes when you can't touch the bottom anymore. Something fundamental in your psychology switches inside your head. You're like, all right, I am no longer in control of this situation. And the deeper the water got, the more dependent I became, to the point where it was several minutes before I could touch. I hadn't touched the ground in several minutes, and I didn't like it. It was my first conscious, rememberable experience with dependence, and I did not like it a bit. Now, the ironic thing is, as a child, I was horrendously dependent. I couldn't even get to the ocean on my own without help. But I hadn't realized it until that point. And dependence, for all of us, is like that. It's something that everything you're raised, your flesh, everything that you are says, ooh. Dependence, especially in America, is a dirty word. I'll let that sink in. Dependence is a dirty word. Next time you're in a fight, you just say, Steve, you're so dependent, and just walk away. Try it, see what happens. No, but think about this. Every connotation of dependence is negative. I went on the internet to look up dependence, and I was amazed at all the bad things dependence were. Drug dependence is bad. Codependent relationships are bad. Dependence on your tax forms are only good at tax time. The rest of the time, they're taking all your money. And the worst possible thing, I hate to mention in church, is Depends brand adult undergarments. Which every time you go in the grocery store, every time you go in Walgreens, it reminds you of your impending decrepitude. One day, this will be you. And you're just like, you know what? That's just TMI. That's too much information. I don't want to think about that right now. I just come in here for a Coke, and I got to have this whole life philosophy lesson over here, and I'm not up for that. The word radiates weakness, helplessness, and vulnerability, which is, we're very, very honest, is everything that we fear and despise. You just think about that. I love to always go back to reflect on movies. You think about, you know, it's okay, you know, the hero defends the weak, but if the weak is too weak, you know, if like the tables turn and the helpless woman grabs the gun and she's too weak to, oh, I can't do it. You're like, what's wrong with you? You're so pathetic. There's no rooting instinct for dependence. Independence, however, is a completely different story. It is a truly American virtue. You will never see the Declaration of Dependence. It just doesn't have the same ring. Independence is strong. It's vigorous and self-sufficient. It is making my own way in the world. Doesn't that sound good? I'm making my own way in the world. Every time I said that to encourage myself when I was broken on the side of the road and completely without a clue because I was making my own way in the world. It would really make me feel good for about 2 minutes. Independence is very American, and it's what we've come to prize and to praise. And, unfortunately for us, it is completely incompatible with kingdom life. Every culture has to examine itself in relation to the kingdom and see where it's coming, see where it's coming from. You see that all in the New Testament. Paul's always pointing out things to different cities and different cultures. You got this good, you've got this bad. This is what we need to work on. We need to examine our American virtues and realize that they're not kingdom virtues. And some of the things that we just take for granted that are the bedrock of who we are and where we come from and everything that we believe, even though it may not consciously, we may be saying something else, but everything that we come from is grounded in this whole other independent kind of thing. But this is a problem for us because God is famous, infamous, if you will, for leading people out of their safe little comfort zones into the deep water. So you have this incompatibility here. I want to stand on my own 2 feet. I want to be the man. I want to be in control. And then you've got God taking you to places where your 2 feet don't reach anymore. I wonder who's going to give. Just think about this. Abraham's minding his own business. God comes to him. I want you to leave town. I want you to leave your home. I want you to leave everything you know and go to a land that I'll show you. Well, where is it? I'll let you know when you're there. Just start walking. Wow, that's a game plan. Moses. All right, I want you to leave the sheep. I want you to go back to the most powerful man in the entire world. I want you to tell him the God of the slaves tells him to upset his entire economy and change everything because I'm not happy with the way things are going. Moses in front of Pharaoh. You know, did you get the memo? Do you know that we're doing things differently now? I mean, these are the kind of things that God does. He's to his friends. All right, this is what I want you to do. Peter, drop those nets, drop your career, follow me. Can you be more specific? Follow me. Well, where are we going? You'll know. Come on. And he did. These are the kind of things that God calls his people to. These are deep water things. You're treading water you can't touch. You really need someone to hold on to. And God has a really bad habit, from a human perspective, of doing this. Because once again, something changes when you can no longer touch the bottom. You're forced to realize how much you depend on God. Now, notice what I didn't say. I didn't say that you suddenly became dependent on God, because just like me at the ocean, you always were dependent on God. You just chose not to realize that until you get out there in the deep water. Because really, even in the shallow water, we're dependent on God, but we're much more likely to forget that, and that makes it much more dangerous. When you get back out of the ocean and you're running around in your own backyard and you just want to let go, like, oh, wow, that was an exciting adventure, but now I'm home and I'm going to just let go of God's hand and I'm going to run around and feel all grown up and like a big person, which is deluded, to say the least. The problem with the shallow water experience and letting go of God's hand is that it's when we're dependent on God that God's power is released in us and God gets his best results. As Larry Crabb writes in his book Soul Talk, even our noblest intention is stained with self-centeredness. When we stop depending on God, when we stop coming from God's corner, we're like, no, I've got this one, the actions may stay the same, but the motives and the results change. And God's just not getting the glory anymore. It's not the same. So that was not like a real positive quote that makes you feel good. I mean, what is this? Brent, tell me, what does this mean? Rick is always telling us that we've got a new nature, that we don't have a sin nature, that we're not slaves to sin, and you're telling us that we're staying with self-centeredness. Maybe you and Rick should sit down and work this thing out before you come and bring the word, because you sound like you guys are about to go Springer on each other. No. What this means is that as a new creation, as a new creature, as someone who has been reconnected to God, that dead thing inside of you has been plugged into your power source and you are now alive again, as was the design all along. Now you have inside of you, at any given moment of time, two different energy sources. We'll call them good and bad. We'll call them the Spirit of God, the power of the Holy God flowing inside of you, and the remnant of selfishness that's still scrambling around down there. Every action, every decision, every word that comes out of your mouth is going to be powered by one of those two things. The process of discipline, discipleship, spiritual formation is every day, every moment, you're deciding which one of those is powering what you're doing. Now, it's easier to discover this in hindsight. Have you ever, anyone, opened your mouth and you said something and you knew it was God? The Spirit of God went, you saw a change in someone's face, and just you're like, that was not me. That was so cool. That was awesome. And you were a conduit, you were a channel. God's power went and changed someone, and the only claim to fame you had of that is you got out of the way, so you didn't trip anything up. That's an awesome experience. If it hasn't happened to you yet, it can and it will, because this is God's intention for your life. Unfortunately, what's much more frequent and much more likely is that you open your mouth and a train wreck comes out and you broadside someone with your words. And I am speaking from experience. There's a sudden silence and you're like, oh my gosh, did I just say that? And like you hear your own words echoing through the room and like, tell me I didn't just say that. It's like someone sprayed ugly everywhere. And you're like, was that me? Yes, that was you. That transaction was entirely powered by your own selfish interest and pain and stuff that God is trying to heal and not get you away from. The tricky part is to identify that source before you act and before you speak. That's the long-term disciplining process. This is what we come to several times here at church, and we talk about training ourselves up, about renewing our thinking, cultivating God's presence in our lives. We do this because we love God and that's what He wants to do, and because this helps us discern which energy is motivating us at any given time. Because it's a lot more fun if you figure this out before it happens. You're like, that's a train wreck ready to happen. We're going to take that thought into captivity. We're going to move over to option B, which is what God wants to say in this situation. And as we mentioned the last couple weeks in Ephesians 4:15, we grow up in all aspects into Jesus, who is the head of this body. He's like, I'm here. Feel free, guys, to grow up. Feel free not to be children your whole lives. Feel free to grow up. Now, I read an article recently, and I couldn't find it, but it gave this, well, I couldn't find it when I needed it to really quote it, but it gave the statistic that something like 2/3 or 75% of Americans believe that the saying, God helps those that help themselves, is found within the pages of the Bible. But that's with American Christianity being as amazingly deep that it is, that people believe that. But actually that was Ben Franklin when he wasn't busy discovering electricity and inventing daylight savings time and saying early to bed or early to rise and stuff like that. He wrote little books full of cool little witty things like that. God helps those that help themselves. But that's not what Jesus says. Jesus has something to say in John 15. Feel free to turn there. Jesus says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes it so it'll be more fruitful. If you skip down to verse 4, he says, abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. Here we come back to this whole abiding in God. We keep touching on this. It's almost as if God had something to say on the matter. I don't understand. You know, and as if we didn't get it the first time, if you drop down in verse 5, Jesus really spells it out. He says, I mean, he was kind of dropping hints in the first four verses. In the first verse 5, yeah, I don't know if the disciples just weren't getting it, their eyes glazed over, but at verse 5, he says, all right, without me, you can do nothing. Without me, you can do nothing. That is dependence. And that's not, it always kind of stings at first. I want you to think about vine and branches. I want you to think about a branch. A branch comes out and it's got leaves and the leaves are green and hopefully they're bearing fruit and everything's good. But branches don't really come equipped with roots. Except for this one tropical plant that I bought one time, but we're not going to talk about that. For the most part, real plants, the North American variety, don't come with roots. The branches grow out, you got leaves, you got fruit, but there's no support structure in and of itself. The nutrients, the water, has to come through something else, the vine. Do you know what you call a fiercely independent, self-sufficient, go-get-it, assertive branch? Anyone? You call it a stick. Glory to God. You call it firewood. Jesus says that right there in that passage. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Anyone who does not abide in me, he's thrown away as a branch and dries up. And they gather him up and cast him in the fire, and they're burned. so much for independence. In the kingdom, independence just doesn't get us very far. Because a kingdom life is a life of dependence on God. It's a life of expectancy. But it's not expectancy of ease and safety, but expectancy of God's very presence in our life, in the midst of our enemies, in the midst of trials and times of stretching. I want to read you something. This is James 1, which we've mentioned a few times here recently, but this is James 1 out of the Message, which I'm going to say stings even more than usual. Listen to this. I came across this recently. I wrote it down and hung it on my wall to remind myself. Consider it a sheer gift, friends, when tests and challenges come at you from all sides. I read this back to my wife after a particularly trying day. I was like, you know, when I read this morning, I should have seen this as a hint. Consider it a gift, Brent, when trials and challenges come at you from all sides, not just one or two, but from every side of your life, ganging up on you all at once in a very unfair fashion. Do you whine and complain? Do you tell your therapist? No, you consider it a gift. Once again, we're working on a spiritual paradigm that is not coming anywhere near from the American place here. You know that under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open and shows its true colors. So don't try to get out of anything prematurely. Let it do its work so that you can become mature and well-developed, not deficient in any way. There's some powerful word pictures in here. Under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open. I almost get the impression of two tubes of toothpaste. Which one's cinnamon, which one's mint? I don't know. Let's squeeze them until we find out which one's which. Which, when you're in it, that's what it feels like. It's like, let's see if you're well done. We'll put a fork in you to see if you're done or not. When you're in it, and when you're in it, that's exactly what it feels like. It's like, God, just kill me now. I think we've gone far enough. Let's just go to your place and we can just move on. And God says, oh no, there's so much more deep water to go. Let's go. But this, I mean, just meditate on that for a second. Under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open and shows its true colors. And that's kind of convicting. Because I know sometimes in high-pressure situations, what come out, I don't like the color of what comes out. It's more of that train wreck stuff that I would really rather not see anymore. But that's like a check. It's like, all right, that's why. And God says, that's why we're doing what we're doing. Because there's still some more of that in you. And we're going to keep working on this till it's gone. But these times of trial and stretching, these are not supposed to be a surprise. These are not supposed to be something that we panic and cry about. These are things that we expect and we cooperate with because we know that God is at work. And now you don't get a lot of amens when you say that kind of stuff. I know, because I'm looking at y'all and it's like, nah, come on, Brent. Let's claim our blessing. Let's not claim anything bad. Well, I want to read you something that kind of helps us focus on this. This is the 23rd Psalm, and we've referred to that recently too. But let's just read it through, and I'm going to read the whole thing, and let's listen to it. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. That sounds good. I like that. He leads me to lie down in quiet pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the path of righteousness for his namesake. I agree. That sounds really good. Those first three verses, that's pretty good, man. That would preach anywhere. That's like a real name it and claim it kind of thing, man. That's good. But then you kind of switch into verse 4 over here. Even though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. You know, this don't fear thing is not happening in the green grass, having the nice refreshing drink. This is when we're in the darkness, when we're in the scary part. That's when we have no fear because we know God's with us. Now we know God's with us everywhere, but that's where these things become relevant. This is where these things come to life. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Oh, that sounds special. Rods and staffs were implements of discipline and correction. Ian talked last week about the dangers of shepherding up on a plateau. I mean, you had the green grass, then you had kind of like a hillside that fell away, and you didn't want your sheep to fall off because they could get eaten or broken their legs or something bad could happen. You've seen that little shepherd's, your little candy cane was modeled after a shepherd's hook. It's when a sheep got stupid enough, you wrap that hook around his neck and yank him back. And the stick, you know, that was for beating off wolves or occasionally wrapping a really stubborn sheep on the skull to say, hey, this is the way we're going. But your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That's what we say. We put it on the little walls of the nursery and stuff and have no idea what that actually means. Your rod and your staff, they're very comforting to me, your discipline and correction and guidance. And you prepare a table before me in the green grass? No, in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. Oh, that sounds good. We talked about David getting anointed. That was a lot of fun. My cup overflows. I like that. That sounds like a blessing. And surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I like that. Let's just hang out at God's house and avoid that whole shadow of death and all that stick stuff, and we'll just hang out at God's house and have all the goodness follow us. But it's not an A, B, or C multiple choice thing. This is all of the above. And we really need to examine our theology to figure out how all the above can happen all at the same time. God's blessing the snot out of me, but yet I'm still in the valley of shadow. We sing about dancers that dance on injustice. But when we sing it, we have this bad habit, at least I do, I'll just speak for myself, of kind of visualizing that I'm dancing in a monument to some long past injustice. There's this big statue of injustice, and I'm dancing around it, and yay, God has the victory, and all the bad stuff is over, and we're throwing a party, because surely I will live in the house of the Lord forever. But the song is about dancing in the midst of injustice. The psalm says that God prepares a table before us in the presence of our enemies. The picture we get, me and Mike Terry talked about this last week, the picture you get is that you're having an intimate conversation with God in the middle of a bar fight. That's the picture I get. I mean, people are smacking each other with stools and fists are flying and blood is flowing, and it's like, so Brent, how you been? Well, you know, I'm doing all right. Duck. And, you know, like, yeah, we're doing good. This is the kind of picture that, I might be exaggerating a little bit, but this is the kind of picture that we got. This is not this quiet picnic over here. This is where God is. This is where his presence is, where he's communing. We got a table in the midst of our enemies. And I would love to tell you that you're never going to get hit by a hook or a flying chair, and that because you're talking to God, everything's going to go smooth for you and nothing painful will ever happen. That would be deceitful. I can't tell you that. Because that's just not the way that God operates. I remember myself waiting impatiently for my enlistment in the Marines to expire because I was certain that I had made a mistake and I was a ministry dead end, and God had big plans for me just as soon as I got free of my very unpleasant circumstances. It's because, you know, I had a band, man. I was going to be a rock star for God. But how can you do that if you can't even grow your hair out? Of course, by the time I got out and could grow my hair out, the whole long hair thing was over, and all the cool people had short hair, which I didn't appreciate. Like, I missed all the fun. But God had called me out of my Christian home, out of a lifetime of being in church, and sent me to the most lost, misguided, confused people I've ever met in my life. And I was looking the horizon for what God had for me. Yeah. I was ready for the circumstances to get just right so I could move on with God. God had a different plan. It was as if I was trying to stretch out a picnic blanket and move all the wrinkles out and get everything just right for me and God to have a nice, peaceful life together on the green grass beside the still water. But while I was inviting God to a picnic, he was inviting me to a battle. I'll give you a couple references. We don't have to turn there right now. 1 John 3:8 says that Christ came to destroy the works of the devil. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says that we, as his followers, are to destroy strongholds, speculations, and everything that is raised up against the knowledge of God. This is a very destructive business. I should really move on right here, but I'm going to make this point. What really bugs me, and it's more in the liturgical circles, but it affects us too, is this picture of Jesus that we get is just all emaciated and sad and barely able to hold his halo up, you know, and it's like waiting for Mary to carry him to where he's going. This is not the Jesus that I serve. Jesus came to destroy the works of the devil. The devil had snuck in and tried to steal the world that God had created. And God came back and said, by the way, he's like, yeah, this is my world and these are my people. And anytime you want to repeat that lesson, you come here because there's more where that came from. That's the Jesus that I serve. He went down to hell and grabbed the keys and came back. He showed everyone who is the boss in God's universe. That would be God. All right, I'm getting off on a tangent, but that chaps me. So then, I guess, trying to make that tangent more congruent in what we're doing, I guess that's how we can expect God to take us out into the deep water. He's not about these shallow things. He's already shown who's boss, and he's like, all right, now come on, come with me. This whole deep water type of stuff. But we somehow often get intimidated when we start thinking about doing great things for God. Oh man, I got to do great things for God. That sounds very painful and stuff. But it's not great things for God. It's great things with God. Because God is out in the deep water saying, come on. And this is where our dependence comes back in. We're holding on to his hand. Which, doesn't that sound weak when I say that? Let's hold on to God's strong hand. It just doesn't feel very macho when I say that. You know, I throw out my chest and it just kind of comes in a second. Let's hold on to God's hand. That's something that we got to put to death. Because that, I mean, I'm serious. This is how deeply rooted this is. That's got to be put to death. Without him, we can do nothing. We can do worse than nothing. We can play church and feel like we're doing something and we're actually just adding to people's burdens and helping people feel good about themselves and achieve nothing. Without him, we can do nothing. And I often forget that God is with me wherever I am, the deep water to shallow water. I forget that God is participating with me where I'm at. That's a simple lesson, but I often forget it. I grew up in church, and I saw this skit in a youth one time, and it really, I've never forgotten it. It was very powerful. This guy wakes up this morning, gets out of bed, and he's going to school, and he looks and sees that, surprisingly, Jesus is there in the flesh following him around. He's like, oh, cool, Jesus and me. We go to school, and he has a cereal, and he goes to school, and he's doing his normal, everyday American thing, and then, but he starts feeling uncomfortable because he's looking at the jokes that he's laughing at, and Jesus is not laughing, and he's like, okay, this is kind of awkward. And as the day progresses, it becomes more and more awkward as Jesus continues to remind him that where you are, that's where I am. And finally, at the end of the day, he's ready to go to this party. And he tries to convince Jesus to stay in the car. Now, Jesus, it's not that bad. But trust me, you're not going to be comfortable. And if you're not comfortable, I'm not comfortable. It's going to be best for everyone that you stay in the car. And Jesus in this skit never says a word. Kind of goes back to the whole pathetic Jesus thing. He just follows him around. And he's like, no, Jesus, you need to stay here. And the very powerful point on a very youth group level, and it's a very important point, is that he finally says, stay here. And when he says, stay here, he crucifies him. Stay here. And he goes in the party and leaves Jesus behind. And it's a very valid point that when we blatantly sin, that we're crucifying Jesus. But I want to take this point one step further. Starting with that, I want to take this step further, is that when I go to work, wherever I am, the Trinity, the Godhead, is in communion and community and fellowship all around me. It's not this lonely Jesus following me around. This is the source of my joy, my fulfillment. Everything that makes me who I am is a breath away from me. And if I get stubborn and independent, I'm missing it. It's not Jesus who's left out of the party in the cold. It's me. God is the party, and I'm the one that's left out. I'm completely missing the point. But when I remember this, when I'm mindful of him, when I abide in God, a whole new perspective comes into my life. God is my whole sufficiency agenda. God is my source and my competence. My feelings and desires are no longer my focus. They're there, but they've kind of gone into the background. That's not what's really important anymore. The glory of God displayed, his love shared, his kingdom extended, that becomes my priority. That's where we need to learn to stay. That's where we need to learn to stay. When this happens, Jesus says that we will bear much fruit. And I want to challenge you that this fruit is what really matters. We get really caught up, and I'll just speak for myself so as not to be insulting, caught up in the very temporary and shallow concerns of this age. You know, what kind of car I've got, what gas prices are, my job, things that seem important, but if you back off to eternal perspective, they really don't carry a lot of weight. What I want to be concerned about is people being reconnected to God, people being introduced to their true joy and satisfaction, the kingdom being extended, results that will matter into eternity. The Bible makes the picture of taking everything you've done with your life and putting it into a furnace. And the wood, hay, and stubble, it burns up, and the true valuables remain. And when you get introspective and you get alone with the Spirit and you realize how much of what I'm really focusing on isn't going to remain and really isn't that important. Because out in the deep water, you have to go beyond yourself. So what am I saying here? Brent, can you give me the 10 steps? That's okay. This is a visible school Bible. It's very tough. It's designed that way. Brent, can you give me the 10 steps, the formula, the key? Can you write a book or a pamphlet on how to become more dependent? How about a formula to how you can pretend to be dependent and just actually seek after God's blessing instead? And you can call the book Dependency or Getting My Way, God's Way or some cool thing. It'd be a top 10 seller. All right, I'm on the verge of a tangent, but we're not going there. No, what I'm gonna leave with you today is three ideas, three suggestions, three ways that we can cultivate this dependence in our lives. Number one is pray without ceasing. It's like, Brent, I know I've come across that verse too, but what does that mean? Well, I'm gonna be honest with you. I can't tell you everything that means. I think there's a lot more truth in that verse than I've plummeted yet. But I'll put it to you this way. I think it's good, and I think it's necessary for everyone to have a daily devotion time. I think you should get up. Well, it's better if you get up. You get up and have your time with God. But the key is that you don't compartmentalize that when you leave. When you go to work, when you go to school, that time's not over. The time is you realize that Jesus is following you to work. You realize that when challenges come to you, it's not you have to throw out your chest and wade through this whole thing. It's like, how am I going to get through this thing? It's so much bigger than I am. Yes, it's so much bigger than you are, because God's not counting on you to do it. He's counting on us to do it, you and God. It's coming. This prayer, pray without ceasing. It's an attitude. It's a cultivation of God's presence in what you do. You know, something comes up and I start to feel stressed. I'm like, oh man, that's a threat to my competence. Well, it's a good thing I don't have any. It's a good thing I'm so dependent, because otherwise I'd feel like a real loser right now. And you just like, God, and it seems trivial. Well, you know, when my cousin's dying of cancer, then I'll pray to God. But I mean, hey, I mean, your report's late. Let's do it. God, this whole spirit, like, God, show me what's important. This isn't important. I'm not going to stress. We're in this together. Another dimension of that, and this is going to sound weird, but it's something that you can apply today. Open yourself up to worship in times of worship. I had one of the strangest experiences of my life just within the last month. I was having a time like that where I was stressing and I was panicking and my heart was beating and I was very tempted to grab my life back off the altar and start controlling it, and because obviously things were incompetent. And just like a teeny bopper nighttime soap drama, suddenly this whole music started swelling in the background. And I'm like, okay, am I going schizo or what? Why am I hearing music in the background? And as I listened carefully, I realized that it was a song of worship that we had sang here that was being replayed. Now, I have no theology to explain how this happens, except for the Holy Spirit does what he wants. And it reminded me that I will not lean on the arm of the flesh anymore, that the pure of God will see him, the pure in heart will see God. And right there, as I'm very tempted to lean on the arm of flesh, like, I need to do something. And everybody's like, I will not lean on the arm of the flesh anymore. I was just like, this is awesome. This is really cool. This is like being in school and someone giving you a hint. Psst, it's answer B. And I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. How did that happen? Can I give you 3 steps to make that happen for you? I don't know. But this is part of praying without ceasing, man. As you seek after God's presence in worship, in prayer, in studying what you do, he stays with you. All right, suggestion number 2. That's not a step. I'd be very careful. See, that's what I'm talking about, this whole American step thing. All right, visualize, and this sounds kind of cheesy, but I want to challenge you to do this. Visualize Jesus being with you, because he is. It's like, well, am I going to visualize little Jesus following me around? Yeah, if that helps you. Because it helps you to remember an important truth that God is with you right where you are, available to help or being embarrassed by what we're doing. The choice is there. It comes back to those energy sources that we come from. And then finally, I want to challenge you guys to sharpen each other. When we go out and have snacks, don't just talk about how good the cookies are, what your favorite coffee is. It's like, where are you in this thing? Where is God drawing you out? Do you feel like you're out of control? When someone feels like, I feel like my life's out of control, don't help him. Don't give him the 3s. Well, this is what you need to do. You need to talk to your boss. You need to da-da-da-da-da-da. Don't short-circuit what God is doing. Encourage that man, that woman, that friend to seek out God. It's like, that's exciting. What? That's not the answer I was looking for. Wow, you should rejoice that you're being surrounded by stretching experiences. And if he doesn't sock you in the jaw, you're off to a really good spiritual conversation. Make appointments to do that. Get with people. Go to Starbucks. Go to Borders. Get with people and do that. Share life and be real with each other. And because I think that will help us get to where we want to be. Because where I don't want to be is a shallow, safe life. I've seen many people live that way, and I don't want that. I think that God has great things for us. I think that his splendor is upon us. I think that something is waiting for us. There's a thing stirring here, and that we need to walk it out and see what it is. And that's all I have to say.